Welcome, welcome to another episode of What'd You Think? The Drive Home from the Movie, where you're discussing how you liked the movie or didn't like the movie and all the details that go along with it. That means lots of spoilers. So as always, if you haven't seen the movie already, stop the recording right now and go watch it and dial us back up and see what'd you think. Today we are doing American Hustle, which is a period piece from the good old 70s. And with us today, I have, as always, my wonderful co-host, Bobby Blakey. Hey. And the lovely Drusilla Blakey joining us today.
Yay.
Hey, welcome, Drusilla.
Thank you.
Well, let's start off by saying how we thought the movie compared to the advertising that we saw in the theater. When you saw the trailer in the theater, what were you kind of expecting to see, and how did it compare with the movie that you really saw? And I'm going to let Drew go first because she's company.
Oh, thank you. I feel so special. Nothing like the trailer at all.
Okay.
I was expecting something like really heavy and gritty, and it was actually funny and gritty. And then, you know, after I saw it, then, you know, the week after, commercials start coming out about, oh, you must go see this comedy. I'm like, I didn't know it was a comedy. So I was pleasantly surprised.
I agree with you. When I first saw the earliest trailers, I thought it was going to be almost kind of a nod to the old, you know, cop action pictures. A lot of, you know, maybe some car chases. Yeah, it was a lot different than I expected. I really liked it, but not at all. What did you think, Bobby?
I was kind of the same way. I wanted to see it, you know, no matter what, because I'm into these kind of films, and yeah, especially, you know, you get the 70s, it felt kind of like it might have like a Goodfellas type vibe to it from the not so much mob, but just that criminal organization in the 70s and all that wrapped together. And I'm kind of glad, because going into it and finding out it's really more of a, you know, it's heavy, but not heavy the way the advertisement made you think.
Uh-huh.
It's still really funny, and it's dark and kind of gritty, and I actually think it made it better because I got something out of it that I didn't expect.
Yeah, I was kind of, maybe some Mod Squad I was kind of expecting. But what I did get, like you said, was a movie that I really enjoyed, and I thought it was fun, and I really related to the characters.
I related to the comb over.
You should start planning that for your future when you go bald.
Oh, I am.
Great. I look forward to it.
Well, Christian Bale in this was about the most ungood looking person I've ever seen. Yeah.
I love that fact, though, because he's one of these actors that I love about it. You know, when we did the Dallas Buyers Club episode, we talked about actors that really get into the roles, and Christian Bale's one of those that does that. You know, he lost all that weight from Machinist, where he's almost a skeleton, beefs up for Batman, and then he comes in this as just this fat, slimy, smarmy dude, and in almost every role, he's almost
unrecognizable.
But the fact that in the plot that they actually bring that up, that he's not good looking, but he's confident, and it just makes it work.
Yes, he's so happy in his fail, except for his hair. What really defined the character for me was that scene where he's putting his hair together.
That opening sequence to the movie, as soon as that came on, like, this is not the movie I thought it was going to be. And he's putting in that extra piece in there, and he's combing it and he's spraying it, and I'm like, the movie can stop now and I'll be happy.
Well, he was also one of these characters where there are so many characters in movies that I'm following how they're progressing, but if a meteor fell on top of him, it wouldn't be that bad. This guy, his only redeeming quality really was his relationship with his kid that wasn't really his kid. He's his adopted son.
Yeah.
And otherwise, he's just kind of a schmarmy loser. But he's your everyman.
Yeah, I think part of him is the fact that he is the everyman, and that he's trying to get rich. You know, he's trying to use that whole American way scheme to get rich. And I think he falls in the wrong place, because I don't think he would have ever gotten as big as he did. You know, and some of the scams, because
he was big, but he was just big enough to still be a loser.
Yeah, yeah, just enough to get by. And when you meet his wife, that's, I just think it's hysterical because, okay, here he is, this really hot babe is falling in love with him for who knows why, and he goes home to his wife, and his wife, I think, was probably a better scam artist than he was.
She was a psychopath, is what she was. And I'm not a Jennifer Lawrence fan, but I thought she was amazing in this movie. Because she somehow was not only insane, she somehow became sexy because she was so crazy.
She's awesome. How can you not be a fan?
Well, Drusilla, usually, as a female, when I go to movies like this, I subconsciously pick a side of which gal I want to get the guy. So who are you kind of rooting for?
Oh, I loved his wife. I love Jennifer Lawrence. I, for some reason, I can't stand Amy Adams. I never really have liked her.
Oh, come
on. I just don't like her. No, but I loved his wife because I thought she was... You know, she doesn't get as much time in the movie.
Right.
But the time we do see her, she's just so insane and just all over the place. But she's still focused on what she wants. She wants him to take care of her. That's all she wants.
I think that's the brilliance of that character, though, because I think if they had used her more, it wouldn't have been as effective.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's why she had such an impact, because, you know, she's kind of the reason that everything falls apart. And, you know, for them at the end, because of her mouth. But you don't expect that because she had so little impact to the rest of the film up to that point. When it happens, you're like, oh, crap, really? She comes in one scene and she's going to ruin it all.
But it's funny. I mean, even with the little bit we see, it's like she's so controlling and manipulative of him. Like everything he does is for her and that kid.
Uh-huh.
You know, to the point where this other lady loves him and is helping him make all this money and he won't leave the crazy lady.
And I was rooting for the crazy lady, too. And when she came in and messed with their stuff, I was like, yeah, do it, do it.
Yeah, but Amy Adams gets a lot of props just for the fact that she walked around that movie almost the entire time with that freaking low-cut V thing. She had to be freezing through the whole making of that movie. It's like she somehow, you know, those old 70s looks, you know, sometimes they're kind of sexy, sometimes they're bizarre, and I'm a fan of Amy Adams as an actress, but not like, I don't look at her and be like, ooh, she's hot, but she was, every woman in that movie somehow came off really hot because they either looked slutty or insane.
Now we know your type, slutty, insane. Oh, wait, you married me.
And now everyone knows.
It all makes perfect sense.
Well, how about it being a historical piece? There was kind of the 70s checklist. We went to the disco and we had a giant phone and
Well, anytime somebody picks up a big phone and it looks like Zach Morris from Saved by the Bell trying to take the classroom or they have to do a rotary dial, you know, or they're on a payphone now at this point. It's just like you get that feeling of nostalgia, even if it's not that old.
Uh-huh.
So it always feels awkward now because you just don't see any of those anymore.
Oh, I love the big hair.
Oh, yes.
And the big frizzy hair for the disco.
Oh.
You're just obsessed with anything disco.
I am. Oh, and the music. I was singing through the whole thing. I'm dancing in my seat at the movie.
Oh, yes, she was.
The soundtrack was awesome.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Because it's not a weird thing to happen during a press screening to have somebody dancing next to you.
I was. I don't care. I don't care if it's at me.
That's great.
Feeling the music.
And it's funny is because I think... all those elements with the 70s vibe and the music and the kind of comical aspect and these over-the-top crazy characters was the only way this story was going to be able to work because, you know, it's based on an actual, you know, the abscam stuff that went on in the 70s.
Right.
And there were so many variations of what happened for them to bring it into just a smaller setting. You know, I think they had to go crazy and over-the-top to make it work. You know, I know people were complaining about it, you know, on some level, like, oh, you're making light of something horrible that happened, but I don't think there's any other way you could have told this story.
Well, my only nitpick about it when Cole and I were leaving the theater is I loved the whole thing, but it bothered me when the guy calls his associate up, and this is toward the end of the movie, and he asks him where he is. I was like, well, you know exactly where he is. You just called him.
Like, it's not a roaming cell phone.
Yes, yes, that thing's connected.
Wow.
But that was like, you know, I'm like, that was my only, it just bothered me. But I did love how toward the end of the movie, you really thought that they were just totally screwed and out of their element, and how they were still able to turn the tables and get away with the money.
Yeah.
See, and it, sadly for me, that's one of the things that didn't surprise me, because I mean, and not in a bad way. I mean, I knew it was going to happen, only because I've seen this happen so many times in so many movies that now I would have been more surprised if they had just all gone to jail and taken it away from them and been like, wow, that sucks, you know, because I'm always now, anytime there's anything going on with con men, mm-hmm. I'm always waiting for the people to turn the tables at the end. Because that's kind of the format of these kind of films, is they get to the end of it and they're going to turn the tide. So the real winning thing is, how clever did they do it and how does it affect everybody, for me? Mm-hmm. You know, and it still worked brilliantly here. Mm-hmm. You know, I love that the movie, the whole thing had led up. It really, the movie ends up really not even being about them being con people or the relationship between anybody with Christian Bale. It's how insane Bradley Cooper is.
Yes.
Because he goes from this guy who's just, you know, this simple FBI agent to this obsessed crazy person because of the thing, to the point where he assaults his superior.
Yes.
Mind you, Louis
that
C.K.
was great.
Louis C.K. is brilliant in this movie. He's one of those guys, and if you don't know who he is, shame on you, because you need to learn. But, you know, he's a comedian, and he did this, and he's done Blue Jasmine, and he's starting to pop up doing these serious, kind of comical, serious roles, and he's just absolutely brilliant.
Oh, I loved it. Drusilla, did you have a particular scene or something that you really enjoyed, or something that kind of bothered you, positive or negative?
The really, really funny thing to me was, okay, so we see Bradley Cooper perming his hair or curling his hair or whatever.
Right.
And then he comes out and he lives at home with his mom and his sister. And
yes.
He looks like a grown man FBI agent, and he lives at home with his mom, you know, trying to fix him up for this wedding, and he's perming his hair at home. It's very bizarre.
There's two folds with that sequence, though. I kind of had that thought at first. I'm like, you can't get your own place. You're an FBI agent. But there's two issues. There's one, it's the 70s. Right. And, you know, these people, and he's Italian. So these mm-hmm. people, these close-knit families, sometimes they stay together. And she could have been living with him. Who knows?
Or but he's probably the only breadwinner.
Right. Well, on the flip side, though, is I think that was more of a showing of how unstable he truly is he couldn't even deal with his own personal life.
Oh.
And he's struggling through this, you know, this FBI world, and as it gets bigger, he can't even control it there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can't just be the FBI agent on the case. He's got to get thrust into it, where he's obsessed with the girl, and he's obsessed with this guy, and now he's obsessed with taking him down, and, you know, and everything is his way, and nothing ever goes his way.
Yeah, he's so obsessed with wanting to be the big hero that he lets himself get drawn into all of this.
Exactly.
And then I have to mention Jeremy Renner's hair.
His hair was awesome.
His presidential hair. He had his presidential senator hair.
He had the most amazing hair I've ever seen.
Right? It was great.
Oh,
and then who was it that played his wife? It's like, I know who she is, and then I finally figured it out, and I forgot again.
Which one? Jeremy Renner's wife?
Jeremy Renner's wife.
Oh, that was a... Hold on, I'll look.
I know, I gotta see if I can find it.
We're not supposed to be looking this up while we're on the air here.
She was from Angel. That's why I know her. Sorry.
Okay.
Interesting fact, Jeremy Renner was on Angel too.
She was also on the client list, is what we talked about on the way home.
Oh, she's on the client list. Sorry, everything goes back to vampires, and Jeremy Renner was a vampire on Angel many, many moons ago.
Before he became a good actor, he was on Angel.
Hey now.
Hello?
Everyone fall asleep looking at Jeremy Renner now? What's happening?
Yeah, sorry. I was just staring at his picture now. Sorry.
Well, since we're talking about random characters, I love the fact that since we get to enjoy spoilers on this show, and I wasn't allowed to write this in my review.
Yeah.
I love that you when you finally meet that mob boss, and it's Robert De Niro.
Yes.
Because he hasn't been doing too many really great parts lately, you know, and when he does, he's on. When he's not, he feels like he's phoning it in. And he has this, you know, that one little small tiny scene in the film, really. And he's on. It's like, he's like, yes, I get to play a mobster again. You know? And that whole sequence is one of my favorite, and the exchange is one of my favorites in the whole film.
Well, I was right there with you because he was a total surprise for me. And they go in and they said, it's Robert De Niro, it's Robert De Niro.
Well, then when you think about it and he walks in, then you say, well, of course it is. Who else could play that part?
Yeah.
It's like nobody else should be playing that part because, you know, it's either him or Al Pacino. And at this point, Al Pacino looks crazy, so he really can't fit the mob thing anymore.
Where is Al Pacino? Did he disappear?
No, he played, what is that guy with the crazy hair that killed his wife or something?
Oh, gosh. Okay, whatever.
Well, anyway, it doesn't
matter.
There's
so many of them.
But that's just it cements his craziness. Phil Spector, that's who he played not really long ago. I'm sure he's doing something.
Yeah, he was awesome. That was great. Oh, the other funny thing is, of course, they use a random Mexican guy to pretend he's Arab. That's just funny.
It's Michael Pena.
Too funny, because I had a flashback of my dad. My dad went to Israel, and he took a picture where he's wearing this turban, and he's on a camel. And I'm like, what? I'm like, Mexican, you're not Arab. But he totally looks like a little Arab man. So in the real life, that really does happen. Mexicans play Arabs all the time.
as well they should.
Well, yes.
But the best part of that working out is not so much that you have a Mexican playing an Arab, because, I mean, you know it because, you know, anybody that's ever watched the movie has seen him before.
Uh-huh.
But yeah. It's the fact that when it's revealed in the movie, because he could have played an Arab in the movie and still been believable not being an actor in the film. He could have been an actor in the film, you know. And
yeah.
He kept, when he comes up, he goes, he's not Mexican, you know. And yeah. It just, the fact that they pointed that out flat out, it just made it awesome.
So funny.
Well, and that the mob boss spoke the language.
Yeah, that was crazy.
I was like, where did that come from?
Well, I think that's what made that sequence work so much better, is the fact that, you know, you expect them to be kind of easy, because it's, you know, the Italian mob or whatever it is, and it's easy to get past, and then for him to suddenly talk to him, and you're like, crap. And then you realize that he can speak back to him, and they get along well, and you're like, well, shit.
That was unexpected. That was great.
That was great, because the nail biter is you're like, this guy, the guy posing is totally lost, and then the answer's
I'm like,
in
they're
going
to pull some guns out.
My only issue, and this isn't really an issue, because, I mean, it's explained easily, but if you don't pay close attention, you'll miss it, is at the end of the film, when the mob guy has got, you know, Christian Bale and them, and you know that the jig is up, they know this is fake, you know he's planning to kill him, beat him up, whatever the case is. And then it skips ahead when you know that he's been roughed up, and, you know, at this point, you know, when it gets to the end, they made this twist and turn, but I think they missed the ball a little bit there, that they could have got a little better explanation of how they got out of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, because it did kind of reek of scene missing.
Yeah, because, I mean, it works, and they explain it, and you're like, oh, okay, that's what they did, because he says thanks for the warning, but it's like, I would have loved to see that flashback of how he convinced him to listen to him, because a normal mob guy would have been like, screw you, and shot him.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, in that time period. And then they would have gone after whoever. But there is like, I want to see how he convinced them, because some of the best stuff is listening to Bell do his con and convince people to buy into him and listen to his you know, political-like speeches to convince people to do things. And I would have loved to see him be able to spin that to the mob guy to make him believe him.
Well, I would like to have also seen him kind of so get into the moment that not only is he trying to get away, but he's trying to get the mob to invest in something.
Exactly.
Funny.
Because he's almost like an extreme salesman. Salesmen always act like they really believe what they're saying.
Well, I think over time, I think he started buying into it.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, the other thing that I think was, to me, and maybe this was just me, talking about buying into it and stuff, is, you know, Amy Adams kept having the English accent that she would fade in and out of.
Yeah.
It actually confused me at one point, not from a standpoint of don't know what's going on, but it's like, I guess I didn't grasp that she was, you know, she leaves it the first time as Amy Adams or whatever, she comes back as the English chick.
Right.
And throughout the movie, she keeps bouncing back and forth, and now I'm thinking, okay, now which one's the real one? And at the end, she's like, well, this is actually me, and it kind of, there was kind of a blurred line there of, yeah. not that you don't know who's the real version of her.
Right.
Who she's trying to convince and who she's trying to trick, you know, because, you know, she keeps Bradley Cooper thinking she's British until she finally thinks she's in love with him or whatever the case is. Mm. But the rest of the movie, it seemed to be kind of random of who she acted like that towards.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, she didn't do it with the main dude because he knew.
Right. Not him, but the rest of the time, it's like one minute she would be doing it, another time she wasn't, and I don't think that was on purpose. I think sometimes you forget that, okay, it may or may not matter with this person, but if you're talking, you know, with a British accent to one person and another associate person there, you should be still talking to them in that same accent because you don't want to break it.
Right.
You know, but I mean, it was so subtle. Most people may not even notice, but I was just kind of aggravated, especially in the big reveal. At that point, I'd forgot if she was English or British or whatever it was, and wasn't even noticing her accent anymore. So then when she started going back into the more Brooklyn tile accent, I was like, oh yeah, there's this still.
Well, I got kind of confused at the end, though, because apparently they scored this massive amount of money, but at the end of the day, you kind of see them in the, you know, they've paired off, and, you know, his wife is with somebody new, and I did think it was hysterical that she had a neck brace on, because that's probably her latest racket, but why would she, I guess, why would they be in that situation if they had that much cash? Wouldn't they be, like, overseas kicking back and...
I think some of it still had to go to Robert De Niro and the mob people, right?
Yeah, I think, if I remember correctly, I think part of it went to them to pay off his stuff because he got his money back. And then there was the whole situation of making sure that some of it got back to the... And I think they said it, some of it went back to the government stuff so that they could show that he actually had it. Remember, because they put a bunch of it in accounts, if I remember correctly.
Bradley
Cooper stuff, that's how they found it.
Okay.
They really stayed with much of it.
Yeah, because remember they get like the anonymous source or something that says they'll offer to return it for immunity. And then...
Oh, that's right. Okay. That's right. Yeah.
So when they left, I don't think they ended up with as much. And I think they still probably got something, but they didn't end up with as much. Plus, it's the 70s, so stuff that what might buy back then is stuff that we could buy at Walmart now. So you remember the whole dialect, which I think was a good point to show the difference. I think it might have been a thing to show the difference between the worth of money in the time period when that whole thing with the microwave.
Oh, yeah. And then, I love the magic oven.
And she's like, don't put metal in it. I can put metal in my, you know, the magic oven.
That's so funny. That is funny. I forgot about that microwave.
So I think part of that is, whether it's on purpose or not, it actually is a good moment to make you, the viewer, understand that, look, money's different right now. Right. You know, microwaves aren't $50 at Walmart. You know, it's a high-end, rich person item.
Right.
You know, so if you have something like a microwave, you're well off. You know, which, you know, because who gives anybody a microwave as a gift and they're excited about it? You know, now it's like, you're like, really? Yeah, my daughter was excited taking one to college.
Well, I thought it was so funny that the gangster was so sad about his knife not being genuine.
Right, from the guy. Because he thought he actually made a deal with somebody important.
That's funny.
Yeah, because that whole thing is like, so what you're saying is my knife's not really there.
I was like, aww.
It's like, yeah, because even gangsters have feelings.
He had it there in the living room where all the cool stuff was.
He doesn't have to tell people it's fake. Any good mobster's not going to tell anybody he got scammed. So he shouldn't even care about that. He should just be like, that was given to me by the Czar of Cleveland.
This is one of those movies that I wouldn't mind having a follow-up montage to. Normally those annoy me, but I would have enjoyed, you know, one of these things where, you know, they show the picture of the person and, you know, this person went kayaking and was eaten by wolves. This person, you know. What became of all the characters after all this went down? Especially since it's supposed to be like a pseudo-historical thing.
Yeah, but I think there are so many different characters in the real story that there's no way they could have even. But there's so many directions everybody's going, it probably wouldn't have hurt, just so you know who the hell's who.
Yeah.
Say, in the parts of the con men, like a stage production.
Well, if they ever ended up in prison, because, you know, you always wonder about people like that. Do they finally end up behind bars anyway, even though they wiggled themselves out of this?
Probably not.
Nah.
And if they did, they're just going to be in and out of the prison system, and we're going to keep paying for them on our taxes.
That's depressing.
I'm sorry. I just got irritated by this whole movie now.
Wow, you took a nice, fun movie.
You know, now my problem with the movie as a whole is I think people seeing it, whereas we had a reaction of, wow, this is so much different than we thought in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it can be one that piss people off because it's so much different than what they didn't expect and be a bad way for them.
Right.
Because if you're going in expecting this 70s crime type drama,
true.
And then it comes out and it's funny, then, you know, you may be like, you know, what the hell, man?
Yeah, that's true. People might not like that. They may be upset about it.
Well, Drew, how many stars would you give it, and would you recommend it to somebody?
50 billion stars, and everyone needs to go watch it.
50 billion stars?
Yeah, it's really good.
Well, Bobby, how many did you give it?
Well, I'm not going to give it 50 billion.
No, that's I think that's star inflation.
I think she's giving you the Mexican rating.
Hey.
Oh, I forgot about the exchange rate.
Exactly.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm gonna give it two ratings. I'm gonna give it a 5 for myself because I thought it was bordering brilliant and more.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll give it a 4 as a whole because of just what I was mentioning, that I think some people are gonna get lost on it because they're gonna be disappointed because it's not what they thought they were getting.
I agree with you. And actually I'm taking it down. I'm gonna give it about 4 stars for how much I enjoyed it personally. And I would give it about 3.5 for the general population, just for that reason, that they're not getting what they're expecting to get, and they might not appreciate the difference. But that being said, I do really think it's a wonderful movie, and I think people should check it out. Thanks so much for being on the show with us, Drusilla. And as always, thank you so much, Bobby.
You are welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, next time, I don't know what I'm going to watch next.
Something with Hugh Jackman's shirt off.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, before we leave, I have to bring that up in this movie. The last couple movies we watched, you know, I know you were disappointed because you didn't get a lot of topless scenes from male persuasion, but this time you got a lot of Christian Bale with his shirt off.
So,
make up for no Hugh Jackman.
It was Chunky Bale. Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
Couldn't even get Batman Bale. You got Chunky Bale.
I would have preferred Bat-Bale.
But it did give you the most amazing comb-over in film history.
It was. That was the rug to end all rugs.